So there was a famine for 3 years. 1 year after another, so Hashem says, "Well, this is because of Shaul and the house of blood. Literally, Asher he meted Divanim because he killed the Divanim." And what happens then? So David is faced. You know, he's got this message from God that there's a famine happening now in his days, which we interpret as being kind of early on in his reign, and it's all about what Shaul did to the Givonim. No idea what's going on. So the prayer continues by source 3, Vayikra, Hamelech leGivonim, Vayomer Lehem. So the king calls the Givonim. Remember, the Givonim are not Jewish. They are the last of the Canaanim. There are ones who are still living in Eretz Yisrael. They're the ones who had kind of fooled Yeshua early on, and the Israel had taken a vow they wouldn't hurt the Givonim, but they were sentenced to be sentenced. They're assigned to be the hewers of wood and drawers of water in the Mishkan. They would be serving the Mishkan. And so the king calls these Givonim and asks them, and the Givonim are not part of Bnei Israel. They're the remainders of the Emari, which is the general Tanakh term for the people who lived in the land before Bnei Israel came. Bnei Israel nishbu lahem, and Bnei Israel had sworn to them they would never hurt them. But Shaul, despite that oath, sought to attack them. In his jealousy about Israel and Yehuda. We have no details about this. We have never seen Givonim before in basically at all, or almost at all in Shmuel Aleph. We have no contact of Shaul and the Givonim. We don't know what this is. But something happened. So Vayomer David Givonim, Masalachem. So David asked the Givonim, what am I going to do for you? How can I be atoned? How can we achieve atonement? Clearly, God is telling us we need to do something to make up for this injustice. What can we do? And you will now bless the inheritance of God. And so Givonim answer, and they say, we don't want money from Shaul and his house. We're not looking for reparations. Ain lanu ish la mit b'Israel. We don't want to kill anybody. So David says, okay, so what can we do? What can I do? So they told the king, Ish Asher Kalonu Asher Damalanu. This man who wiped us out, who has taken our blood literally, and wiped us out from dwelling anywhere within the boundaries of Israel. This Shaul. Give us 7 of his descendants. And we will hang them on the hill of Shaul, Shaul's hometown. He who is the Bechir Hashem, the chosen one of God. That's probably a sarcastic comment. But we're going to show them that. Okay. If they want to end the famine, David has to give up 7 of Shaul's descendants. And then there's a paragraph break in the middle of the pasuk. There's a pause. Eventually, David comes back and says, "Be'or Melech Ani Yeten." We talked about being the trolley problem. But you sacrifice these 7 people in order to save the people. Okay, he has to decide that. So the question is, and we talked about this before. What had happened to the Givonim? Why were the Givonim so angry? What was the injustice that God said you need to make it up to the Givonim? Not clear. The Talmud Yerushalmi, verse 7, says that Shaul had actually killed Givonim. Shalach David b'Kara'an, Amar lahem, Malachem al-Beit Shaul. So David tells him, this is Yerushalmi describing this story. It says, what is going on between you and the house of Shaul? Amar lo, Aidei shehimit mimir shiv'an Hashem. It's 7 of us. Shaul killed 7 Givonim. When did he kill the Givonim? Well, there were Shnei Kotzbe Eitzim, Shnei Shobei Mayim, Sofer Chazam Shamash. That these are all those who were serving in the Mishkan. Shaul wiped out all the Kohanim in the city of Nob. That's where the Mishkan was. And when he was chasing after David, And Yerushalmi says, in that process, killed killed seven. That's why they want seven. People killed seven of the Givonim. So Mulan, Matun Va'on. So they, David says back to them, what can I do then? What can I do for this sin ba'avon? So they said to him, Yiten lanu shivan Hashem. We want seven back. We're going to want revenge. And the Malbim takes that approach, agrees with that. It says, well, why is this happening? You know, why is this happening now in the time of David? Why does Hashem punish Sha'ul when it happens? This is the wrong thing to do. That's fine. But punish Sha'ul. Why is it happening now? So the Malbim says, and I would say, so after Sha'ul kills these Givonim who are there in the city of Nob, in his paranoia, that's what it means, that he killed Givonim literally, Shafach Sha'ul ke'esh hamato. Sha'ul sent forth his anger like fire, literally. He was furious. That's Sha'ul's nature. Again, that's his paranoia. The Ga'am al Yetar Givonim. He decided that all the Givonim, any Givoni anywhere, was obviously a traitor. So he is going to attack all the Givonim, Hanim Imbi Arei Israel, who are living anywhere else in Israel. Tivalach alotam, and commanded to wipe them out, all the Garshem and Arts, and to expel them from the land. Because he figured that, well, they are working with Kohanim, the Kohanim are working with David, they're all out to get me. I'm going to wipe them all out. Because that's what the role of Givonim was, to be those who served as the staff of the Mizbeach. Even though Yeshua had sworn Lachayotam to keep him alive, he figured, well, that breed doesn't exist anymore because they're rebelling against me, so I'm going to attack them. But that still doesn't explain why Sha'ul wasn't punished. What's this doing B'imei David? Others say, emphasize this happened in the days of David. This famine happens, this drought happens, and God is punishing because of what happened with Sha'ul. We have no reference to any kind of genocidal war. We have no evidence to show attacking the Givonim. So the Talmud Bavli proposes a more subtle answer, which is where I wanted to really look at. This is the Gemara Meravah. Ki heichan matzina b'Sha'ul shemit Givonim. The obvious question. Where did we see that Sha'ul killed Givonim? Our pasuk says it happened. We don't have any story like that. El mitok shaharag Nov irakonim. But once, when he wiped out Nov, the city of the Kohanim, where the Mishkan was, that's where the Givonim earned their living. That's how they had food to eat, right? They worked in the Mishkan. He wipes out the Mishkan. They no longer have a source of support. The Torah considers that like killing them, taking away their livelihood. Similarly, Baba Kama, Rabbi Yochanan, kol gozel et chavero, shevet prutas. If you steal from someone else, even a penny, kilu notel nishmato, it's like taking their life. Omer, because it asks what it means when it says el Sha'ul v'beit nimim, asher imit givonim, because that's what it means when Sha'ul killed him. It was a financial thing. They weren't literally killed. And the Malbim expands on that idea. Why is this happening later? Now, again, Malbim thinks that Sha'ul literally killed the Givonim, but the analysis applies even if he impoverished them. The same thing will apply, because it's an interesting way of looking at what B'nai Yisrael were doing at this time. It's not a nice thing. This is a Malbim. Sha'ul hakotav b'kinatol b'nai Yisrael v'yuda. Sha'ul sought to attack the Givonim in his jealousy, in his paranoia over Israel and Yuda. Lo kama atato, even though he didn't do anything, nothing happened, right? He did not kill anybody. Chozek kvar nitnu lehefker. Still, once he established that they had already been hefker, they had already been second class citizens. They had no status in Israel at all. They weren't Jewish. They were from the Yetra Amorim. Vasuba'em ish esher beinav. And the people did whatever they wanted with them. Mayulavez ve'matzil. They were despoiled and no one would save them. Gulimim gershim, exiled, cast away. They were an untouchable case. Shazeh amar asher adim alonav nishmadu me'etzeseh b'kol b'gol Yisrael. That we are unable to settle anywhere in the land of Israel. That's what their complaint. Gam acharei mot Shaul, and even after Shaul died, that continued on. Even him were still the second class citizens. Malach Ishboshet Tachtav, Ishboshet son of Shaul was the king. Gam Yisrael Shamruet Lahem Misitimat Avihem. Yisrael kept this hatred that his father, that Shaul, and that their ancestors has had. Because Bnei Israel had always had this resentment for the Givonim. They had fooled them and that they couldn't take their land. They wanted it. And no one had pity on them, on these Givonim, who were living in among Bnei Israel. And even when David became king, they didn't fix this. They're this image of these. You know, we have the land of Israel with the Jews living in the land, and they're all wonderful. And then there are these second-class citizens who are the hewers of wood and drawers of water, who are being oppressed the whole time. But as long as they're in the Mishkan, they have some status. They wipe out the Mishkan, they have nothing. Okay? They were worthless in their eyes. And while the Kohanim treated them with respect, that's what the Givonim were in the Mishkan, they had that status. But once they were strangers, they were being oppressed. Once they didn't have the Mishkan anymore, Shaul wipes out that the Mishkan, kicks them out from the Mishkan and Givon. Even them have no status at all. No one had pity on their tears. And that's why Hashem was angry in the days of David. Because none of that got better. And according to the Chazal, this was well before Avshalom. Again, we said this was early in David's reign. Early in when he was reign. And Hashem sees, look, David, your job is to make a nation that is Mishpat Tzedek, and it can't just be for your people. It's got to be to the Givonim as well. So Hashem says, you're not going to support the Givonim. You're all going to feel the hunger. That's what this famine was. Just like these poor people were suffering. They were hungry. So Bayara of Shoshanim Shanach Hashanah, and he quotes now the Medrash that it was for 3 years this famine happened. Because the first 2 years they figured this is God telling us the message. What else is going on? We talked about the Medrash that they tried to eliminate the Avodah Zarah. That wasn't it. They eliminated Arayot, immorality. That wasn't it. Ushrichatamim, Kamosh Amru Chachamenu, like there's something in the Mishnah, but the Midrash we quoted before. But no, that wasn't to solve the problem. And no one thought that what they were doing to the Givonim, literally for centuries, treating them as second-class citizens, you know, came isolated, making them the workers. No one even thought there was wrong, anything wrong with that. No one thought there was something there to be fixed. And then the third year, that's when they come and they seek God, and that's when it says, and they ask the Urim and Tumim, now we have, it's about the Givonim. So that's why all Bnei Israel are punished. This was not just Shaul. This is looking at a very ugly way of looking at Jewish history after they come in. It's all too realistic, unfortunately. The Givonim are the last of the Canaanim, live in the Canaan, right? Everyone's got Canaanophobia. They can't stand Canaanites. Okay, so Yeshua says, swore to protect them, but still tells them, "Hata arurim atem." You're still cursed. You are now destined to be slaves hewers of wood and the and the drawers of water. As long as they were serving Beit Elohim, as long as the Mishkan, they had financial support, they had that parnasa, and they had the same social status, so it wasn't that bad. As soon as Nova is destroyed, they lose the Mishkan, they lost both. Now they are separate. Now they have something to seek revenge for. So there's an incredibly harsh quote by Chesterton, who was an English author in the late 1800s into the 1920s. He was an anti-Semite in the sense that he didn't like Jews. He thought they were obnoxious and gaudy and didn't know their right place. Good friends with all these Zionists, talked to Chaim Weizmann all the time. Urged the British government to let the Jews all go to Eretz Israel. We definitely could use more anti-Semites like him, a lot more than the friends that we have. But this is what Chesterton said about Zionism. Again, this is in 1920-something. The true test of Zionism may seem a topsy-turvy test. It will not succeed by number of successes, but by the number of failures. What the world, and certainly not least the Jewish world, is generally called failures. We test it not by whether Jews can climb to the top of the ladder, whether Jews can remain at the bottom. If those they rule and judge are not Jews, they have not established a common, commonwealth, but only an oligarchy. It is said again that ancient Jews turn their enemies into hewers of wood and drawers of water. The modern Jews have to turn themselves into hewers of wood and drawers of water. They cannot do this. They cannot turn themselves into citizens, only kind of alien bureaucrats. The Jews are all the lawyers and doctors, and you hire and everybody else. If they bring the Filipinos in to do all the work, that's not a nation of justice. And the Jewish state will not be a success when the Jews in it are successful, or even when the Jews in it are statesmen. It will be a success when the Jews in it are scavengers, the Jews are sweeps, when they are doctors and ditchers and porters and highwaymen. I think that's part of what happened here. They turned the Givonim into their dockers, ditchers, porters, and hademen. And that becomes really what goes wrong in the early days. But that's what this parak is telling us going wrong in the early days of David's rule. He's not creating a nation that includes all of its citizens. And the irony here is that after the Mishkan is destroyed in Nob, where does it go to next? Well, he establishes the Mishkan.
Is this split in two?
Yeah, well, the Mishkan has already lost the Aron. The Aron has been in Kiryat Arim beforehand.
And then the other place.
Shiloh is destroyed by the Plishtim. The Aron is gone. So what they have in Nob isn't really a Mishkan. It's a Mizbeach. They have an altar. They've got, the table, the Shulchan, Lech HaPanim, all that in Nob, but they don't have the actual Aron. They still have a central place. It's basically the big, it's called the Bama Gadolah. They have a central altar in Nob. Shaul decides that the Kohanim of Nob are all betrayed him, wipes the whole thing out. And then Shmuel the Hanavi reestablishes that Mishkan, that Mizbeach. He just put the Mizbeach back in the city of Givon. That's the irony. That's the city of the Givonim, the original city of Givonim. And it was a major city, okay? There's a big city where the Givonim generally live, and Shmuel puts the Mishkan back there. And this is Yeshua talking about the Givon originally. When the Givonim make peace with Bnei Israel, all the rest of the kings who live around the area get really worried. That as soon as the king of Yerushalayim, Adonai Tzedek, hears that that Yeshua had taken the city of Ai, and they wiped it out just like the Yericho, that they had conquered Yericho, they had conquered the city of Ai, and they were moving east. And the people of Givon made peace with Bnei Israel. So now all these people of Israel are invading the land of Canaan, and they had a major beachhead. They're very afraid because Givon was a major city. It's one of the king. They had their own independent king of these 31 kings of Canaan. That was one of the major cities. That Givon was a was a huge city, and the fact that now Yeshua had made them allies, that was a bad thing. So the king of Jerusalem has this alliance and tries to attack the Jews. They lose. Yeshua wins that battle. So that's the city that Shmuel goes back and it reestablishes the Mizbeach in the city of Gibeon. So my hypothesis, which I have seen no support, no mention, I can't find anything there, so this is just me, is that that was meant as the kapara, right? Shmuel Navi sees what happened to the Gibeonim in the time of Shaul and wants to make up. So therefore puts that the Mizbeach back in the city of Gibeon, gives it back to the Gibeonim. Basically, if that was the problem, then we're going to give it to the Gibeonim and we'll address this injustice. The irony, the counter irony is that this failed because Shaul basically made all of the city of Gibeon free. He kicked the Gibeonim out because it was part of the territory of Binyamin. Okay, if you're looking at Yeshua, when the cities were given out, these are the seas that belong to Binyamin. Remember, Shaul is from Binyamin. It's Yericho, Bechagla, Amek, Ketzitz, Gibeon, Varamah, Ube'erot. And specifically, Gibeon was the place where Shaul's family lived. This is from Divrei Yamin. Gibeon, Yeshua, Abi Gibeon, Yigael, the head of Gibeon, the city of Gibeon under Benyamin, Yemiel, Shemishto Macha, Ubino Bachar Abdan, Vitur Vikish, Uvalnova Nadav, Vlaz Vigador, Vacha, Vichai Makar, a bunch of names, Vener Holy to Kish, Valisha Holy at Shaul. So Shaul's grandfather settles in Gibeon, and that's the place where the Shaul's family lives. Jolie Yatan and Lukishua Bet and Abiyadavid, Eshbal, all of those. So this is the way Rav Levi at the Gush puts it. Sevir Ma'od Laniya. It makes sense to say, Shaul Hayat Munyan Laresha Kol Nachla Binyamin. Shaul wanted to inherit all of the land of Binyamin that had been assigned by Yeshua way back when. Will select the Gibeonim and to remove the Gibeonim entirely, even from the city of Gibeon. It's named after them. That was their hometown, and he kicked them out entirely. So his goal when he's wiping out the Gibeonim, so he wants to kick the Gibeonim out of Gibeon and allow the people of Binyamin to settle there. That they wanted to give to Binyamin the territory that was owned by the Gibeonim. In Sugim Divrei Yamim that we quoted, Alaki Shaul Yeshav B'Gibeon, that Shaul actually settled in Gibeon, Kol Nira Gam B'Sharai Gibeonim, and also it seems in the other cities of the Gibeonim, at B'nei Mishpachto, that all of his family settled in these areas. The Kitznei Tzavaot, Kol Nira Gam Tachimar Karim, Mishav Binyamin, he moved all of Binyamin into the cities of Gibeonim. This identity of the family of Shaul, the city of Gibeon. Hagarat Avi Ha'anach Mishpachti Shala Yavi Gibeon, and the fact that in Divrei Yamim, his grandfather was called the Avi Gibeon, the head of Gibeon. Lamdim She'ir Zeh Hafchal Yot Ir Merkazit B'Nachlat Sheva Binyamin teaches us that this city became a central city in the land of Binyamin. Was probably the second most important to the actual capital of Shaul, which was called Givat Shaul. And so that's what means that Vevakesh Shaul Hakotam Kinatol Ibnei Yisrael Yudah. It's paranoia. Shaul makes Gibeon Irain. He wipes the Gibeonim out of Gibeon. And that's what they mean when they say Nishman, when the Gibeonim are saying Nishmadu mitaseba kol b'gvul Yisrael, that the Gibeonim saying we have no place to live and we're all the land, we've been wiped out from all the land of Israel. That not only, okay, we're not in the Mishkan anymore. You've taken our historical, this has been centuries, our historical role as those who serve in the Mishkan, serving God, and you've kicked us out of our historical homeland, and now we have nothing. And the way Malbim's reading that, the injustice continues into the days of David. Right? David's not, and it never, it does, it's lo ala libam. No one ever realized that there's something unjust happening here. They just think that's natural. Obviously, the Givonim have to be the chimney sweeps and the hewers of wood. But that's the point when David decides, that Hashem decides it's been too long. Hashem is doing it specifically, doesn't do it in the times, doesn't bring this famine in times of Shaul, doesn't in times of David. And there's a midrash here. We can look at the cartoon to amuse you while you're while I'm reading. This is the midrash. Rav Huna of Rabbi Yirmiyah, b'shem Rabbi Shmuel bar Rabbi Yitzchak. Rav Huna said the name of Rabbi Yitzchak. Ika, and the midrash here is talking about various famines that happened that are mentioned in Tanakh and what the story behind them was. And they're talking about this famine of the days of David, 3 years of famine, 3 years of drought. And it says that Ikar Avtentia, that the authentic famine, right, that is in fact what it comes from, Avtentia in Greek, Shalom, the real famine, Lo Yal Ro'oy Liyopi Me David. It shouldn't have been the times of David, it should have been the times of Shaul. We know that. Shaul is the one who wiped out Nov, destroyed the status and the parnas, the support of the Givonim. But since Shaul was just a sapling of a sycamore tree, let's see what that means. He was just a sapling. Gilgul Akash Baruch Hu Lavi B'mei David. Hashem brought this famine in the days of David instead, much later. Matla Amrina, and this is what people say, Shiloh Chata V'Yochna Mishtalma Atzma. Isn't it weird when Shiloh sins and Yochan pays, which evidently was a common phrase in that time, and I make the point that obviously everybody has these common, yeah, everyone has in phrases, and obviously everybody in the time of the Medrash knew exactly what that meant. Shiloh Chata One person sinned and the other person is paying for it. Isn't that weird? But, and that's just what it is. Should have been Shaul, but said David pays for it. But the Midrash says, no, that's not really what it was. It wasn't, there was a reason why it happened in Bain David. Or Yechia Rabba, Amarchi Rabba. Pia says, no. Mashal, that I'm going to give you another mashal. Here's a parable to what's happening here. Mashal zigzag to a glass, it's like a glass blower. Shia biado kipa, who had a basket, mele'a kosot, basket full of glasses, which are cut glass bowls. Evidently, a diadretum is a real thing. So the glass blower is these fancy cups, fancy bowls. But he's tired of carrying it around. He wants to hang it up, put it on a shelf. And maybe Yeted would bring a peg, and we would strike this peg into the wall. He's not going to hang his basket from the peg because it's all going to fall down and break. But not Laba. So he pulls himself up. Make sure the peg is bearing his own weight. But once he knows it's the peg in the wall is strong enough, he hangs his basket on this peg. What's the mashal? So therefore, the famine wasn't brought in the days of people who were just too weak to handle the famine. That's what Shaul was, too weak to handle this famine. That's, he was a sapling of a shikma. The people who were stronger, Hem could handle the famine.
Danny, what's the word
shifufim?
I never heard of that.
It means weak. The opposite of gibarim.
Okay.
which doesn't make any sense either. Right? Why? Israel, what do you mean they were stronger in the days of David than the days of Shaul? I think the answer is, it doesn't refer to physical strength, but it means resources. The day, B'mei David, when this famine happens, Israel could handle the famine better because they were rich. days of Shaul, there was constant war. There was poverty. There was just barely holding the country together. They may have had an excuse. Days of David, no. They could have taken care of the Givonim of these outcasts, but they didn't. David, I like this quote from Joseph Heller, that David had taken a kingdom the size of Vermont to create an empire as large as the state of Maine. Just to get a sense of what we're talking about here, okay? In case you think Maine is a huge empire. But in the context there, it's a big area. They've got the money. They can afford to support these people now. Joel has an excuse, okay, we can't support the Givonim. We're barely making it ourselves. But once the nation is rich, they're rolling in money. As we said, David has got all this money he's put aside for the Beit HaMikdash. He's not using it. He's not supporting the Givonim, these second-class citizens, the one that they are oppressing, the one they're turning the land of Israel into, to use an unfortunate term, an apartheid state. That's exactly what he's describing here. So the Midah Keneged Midah, what Hashem does is says, no, you got a drought. Everyone's going to feel this. You're all going to suffer now. And we said that his reaction was not to support the people, right? I'm not going to use my money set aside. I'm going to build the Beit HaMikdash. I don't want to use all this wealth.
It's restricted.
That's right. That's not, I don't have this money. I can't touch, you can't touch it, right? That's what Yoga Shimoni said. Called Kesef Hazav Hazeh Yidushu LeBeit HaMikdash. He had all this money. It was dedicated to Beit HaMikdash. Shabar Ra'av Shlosh Shanim. And when these 3 years of famine came, Bikshu Mimena Yisrael Yiten. But Yisrael came and said, give it to us. Lo Ratzel Yiten Lehem Klum. He didn't give them anything. That's the problem, what happens here.
But Danny, at least he was consistent. He didn't give it to the Jews and he didn't give it to the Givonim.
Right. Consistency is not necessarily a good thing. That's the lesson here, is that yes, David was absolutely consistent and he was absolutely wrong. Right. Hypocrisy is not a bad thing if it leads you to do good things, okay?
That's interesting.
Right. Hypocrisy is the what's the phrase? Hypocrisy is the acknowledgement or something like that, that vice pays to virtue.
Interesting.
That you may be full of vices, but if you're a hypocrite, you'll act in the right way, even if you don't really believe it. To my mind, that's better than being absolutely consistent and doing the wrong thing. That's it. And what makes it so wrong is that he can't build the Beit HaMikdash, right? We're going to come back to that when we get to the last paragraph. He's already been told he's not going to build the Beit HaMikdash. But look at the Ramban, it says that wasn't absolute. He could still have done it if he had pulled the people together and the people had built the Beit HaMikdash as a whole. But there are two requirements for building the Beit HaMikdash. Right? That's the Gemara, that's in next week's parsha. When you cross the Jordan, you'll sit on the land that God is giving you, and you'll have peace from all your enemies around, and you'll live securely. And those really are two different conditions. And then you'll have a place that you'll bring all your olot, and you have everything. And you can build the Beit HaMikdash at that point. So when David, early in his reign, sees that and says, again, this is back in Parak Zion, Biki Yashav HaMelech Beveito, right, the king is in his palace, Hashem Hiniach Lo Misavim Mikol Eivav, and he's got peace from all the enemies all around, and he says, oh, that's what the pasuk says, Hiniach Lechem Mikol Eivechem Misavim, and you have peace for all your enemies around. So he says, Vayom HaMelech El Natan Avi, so the king asked Natan, I'm in this palace of cedar, and the Aron is still in a tent. Time to build the Beit HaMikdash. But he misses the other part. He misses the Yeshavtem Betach, where the people have to be living securely. And he quoted Yonatan Eibshetz, Yeshavtem Betach is connected to Parnassa. You have to have enough. You have to be. You can't have this kind of food insecurity. It says, the land will give its fruit and you'll eat and be satisfied. Then you will live in betach. You will live in security. So you need to make sure that happens first. We talked about you need a rule of law, not of man. You need a secure government, and we need the kind of economic, not so much prosperity, but equality, that no one has that food insecurity. That's an important part. And then you can worry about the Beit HaMikdash. Once you've established that, then you're at peace from the outside, and this Yeshavtem Betach, that go with the Achotem Masova. Then he could. But David doesn't get that. He misses that. So we talked before that we're looking at this whole parak in the eyes of Emmanuel Levinas, the philosopher, who's giving these lectures about the Gemara, about Talmud, in the decade after the Holocaust to French Jews. And this is what he puts. He's looking at this parak, and he says, the Talmud knows that Talmud also knows the fault of Saul toward the Gibeonites, for which we cannot try to trace in the Bible, right? He said that because when they wipe out Nov, they no longer have a source of Parnassa. They've been kicked out of their own cities. It would have been an indirect one. The sin was not directly. They didn't kill them directly. In executing the priests of the city of Nob, Saul left the Gibeonites who served them without a means of subsistence. The Midrash affirms that the crime of extermination begins before the murders take place, that the oppression and economic uprooting already indicate its beginnings, that the laws of Nuremberg already contains the seeds of the heart of the extermination of camps and the final solution. That's harsh in terms of what's saying about David and what it's going to lead to. Okay. And that is what Levinas is saying is why, you know, that as again, Eibschitz in his Drasha that we quoted says, Yoter Tov Tzedakah Mibinyan Beit Hashem, that Tzedakah is more important than Beit Hashem, because it leads to that this is the famine of David, Asher Himit at Givonim, because he killed the Givonim, not so much it happened, but where this was potentially going. In other words, the trolley problem is much worse. This is not about a famine. This is the fact that David's riding on this trolley that's barreling down the tracks toward an unspeakable evil. We're going to turn the nation of Hashem into those who will potentially wipe out the Gibeonim when they don't deserve it. So Hashem tells David, you have to look El Sha'ul Beit HaDin. We have to look what happened with Sha'ul and these and this house of and the house of blood. Not that that's happened not yet, but what that may yet happen. So now the question is, what does he do? Even him tell him explicitly, we want these seven men. They're innocent. Does David pull the lever on the trolley? He sacrifices those seven men literally to save Israel's soul. And that's where we have to go from here. And that's what Levinas is going to actually look at. But I'm going to stop here.
Why would he think that that would actually be true? Sacrificing those seven people would actually lead to peace.
That we will talk about, I think not next time, but two times. Okay. That we're going to talk about the difference between revenge and reparations and what happens to Givonim and that. Yes, no, that is always the problem with this exact sort of thing, is that it doesn't ever end.
Right.
But leave that question in the air, because okay. That's an important question. That is exactly where we're going to go with that. I'm going to stop here.
Thanks, Danny.
Thank you.